Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, we're back with JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel, or at least most of us. Tracy and Emil join me for this session, and we talk, or rather Emil schools us, on mortgages again. Can someone get a mortgage on a normal work visa, not having permanent residency yet? How are mortgage applications assessed based on age, level of Japanese, source and size of annual income, different types of employment, length of residency, and other factors? What kinds of properties qualify for a home loan, and why are lenders so strict in Japan? How does refinancing and borrowing against equity work in Japan, if at all? And finally, what's happening with interest rates in Japan these days? So a nice deep dive into all things mortgage related. Enjoy the session, and I'll see you again on the other side.
The Japan Real Estate Experts panel, back in session, minus Ziv's face again. Hello.
Hi, Ziv. Hi, Emil. How are you going?
I'm good, Trace. Hello, Ziv. Yeah, fantastic. It feels like, I think we had a call just last week, was it, about the reviewing sort of some of the feedback we got from the summit. But I think before then, it's actually been quite a while that we've had a proper real estate discussion. Proper JREP sort of panel. So I'm happy to get into it. Quick intros. Yeah. Go ahead.
We published the debriefing session last week because I wanted to get it out there after the event, but this recording will probably be a few months later. So to us, okay. It's been a week, yes.
Nothing is done in order. So
let's do a quick round of intros because I feel there are lots of new people that sort of jump on and listen.
Yep.
So Tracy, why don't you go first?
Sure. My name is Tracy. I'm a long-term resident of Japan. I'm also someone who runs multiple companies and businesses, one of which is I run a series of houses for short-term rentals for Minpaku. I am a registered Minpaku Kandi, as well as my own properties. I have a hotel license and I have Minpaku licenses, and I also run serviced apartments. So I'm a bit of an interloper on a real estate panel because I really, my business is hospitality, and it's the business that happens within the walls of the real estate. So so I don't look at things like, you know, property, you know, capital gain or anything. It's more about how much cash can you earn once you have that property. So that's my specialty. I coach and I train and I help people all over the world maximize their profit, and also with their branding and their marketing for their hospitality business.
Trace, so, just for people who have joined us just recently, can you just clarify what's a Minpaku and what's a Kandi?
Sure. So a Minpaku is anything that is a short-term rental. So that's under 28 days. It's typically rented on like an online travel agency like booking.com or Airbnb or VRBO. So that's how you find a Minpaku. That's different from a serviced apartment, which is anything 30 days or longer. And that's again furnished. All of these types of businesses are furnished and will include all utilities. And a Kandi means a property manager. So I property manage for myself I don't tend to property manage a large portfolio. I have clients who have houses here and they spend some time here and then some time abroad. And while they're away, I manage their property so that they have an income stream. So that's...
You're very boutique. Sometimes people say boutique just to mean they're a small company. But in your case, I think you really are boutique.
We have a very high touch business, a very high touch hospitality business. So we're very guest focused because we are extracting revenue streams from lots of different sources. It's not just the nightly rate. So, you know, we're obviously doing revenue, revenue management for seasonality for a number of guests. And also we have, you know, we have a concierge service. So when people need tours and people need transportation or babysitting or things like that, we provide that service for a fee. And so we're extracting, a profit share from all of those services.
All right, Emil.
Yeah, that's quite an introduction. my name's Emil. I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo. You probably heard me in the introduction for this podcast and all of Ziv's podcasts and YouTube videos. If you're looking to buy a personal home in Tokyo, you're a resident here, you want to get a typical Japanese mortgage and financing and purchase your family home, I'm your guy. So please shoot me an email, sales@realestate.jp.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that resident, non-resident thing in a minute. We have an interesting question on that today.
The discussion about mortgage, sure.
But myself, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and Ziv, your introduction, please.
So, Ziv Nakajimam again. Also a long-term resident here, about 11 years now. And my partner and I own a real estate consultancy and proxy services company, which basically means that we represent people, whatever their real estate interest in Japan might be. So it could be holiday homes, could be investment properties, it could be land for development, akiyas, what have you. And we utilize third parties like Tracy and Emil for that process. So about 80% of our clients are non-residents who need somebody to represent them here. And about 20% are residents who just don't have the time or the bandwidth or the language skills to deal with stuff themselves. I've also got another company with another partner that helps with anything else that is not related to property in Japan. So if you want to set up a business, if you want to register a car to your holiday home address, if you want to relocation support services, market research, we do all sorts of stuff. But back to the residency and mortgage debate. We had an interesting question on the JREP messaging group recently.
Mm-hmm.
The one in front of you, Emil, which I think was your specialty, right?
Yeah, so I deal a lot with home financing. So most of my clients are long-term residents in Japan. Often it's a foreign spouse with a Japanese spouse, like a mixed sort of couple. And they're looking to buy their family home here in Tokyo. And they want to use Japanese financing, like bank financing. And because we're a licensed real estate agent, we have the loan officers assigned to us from the Japanese major banks. And we can submit documentation on the client's behalf. Essentially, it's kind of traditionally what we see is like the mortgage broker function. So we do that. However, we don't get paid by the bank. Interest rates are so low that they don't really make much money on the loan. We don't get any kickbacks, but we just want to make sure that you can secure financing so that we can make the deal and get the sales commission from the deal. That's how we make our money. So I have lots of experience in arranging financing for foreign, often a foreign client. One of the questions that came through was, from someone, an inquiry saying, I have an engineer or specialist in humanities visa, which is a typical work visa, an employment visa. And they've been living in, they've been employed for 6 years at the same company and their annual income is almost 4 million yen a year. Can they get a home loan? So in general, in Japan, to get 100% financing, or what we even call sometimes 105% financing, which the 105% talks about the full property value plus the approximate 5% closing costs. that are incurred, which includes our agency fee, transfer duties, stamp taxes and stuff like that, lawyer fees and so forth. In Japan, it's actually, if you have permanent residency and stable employment, you can get 105% loan. So you can buy a property with no money out of pocket. You know, if you want 100 million yen property and closing costs are about 5 million yen, it's, you can get 105 million yen loan. It's buying a house in terms of cash contribution is often cheaper than renting a property. Because when you rent, you need about 6 months worth of rent cash to do that. However, if you don't have permanent residency and you don't have a Japanese spouse, then you're likely not eligible for that 100% financing. But you can still get 80% financing. So if you're not permanent resident, then the bank thinks, you're a little bit higher risk that you may just leave the country at any time. So if we give you 100% financing, that's a little bit risky. If you leave where you have no money invested in the property, so you can just leave and when we're stuck with it. So what they require is at least a 20% deposit. So if you don't have permanent residency, you can get 80% financing. You still need to pay 20% deposit plus the about 5% closing costs. So that's kind of the only thing that's different. Except they will care about your employment.
Not all banks would approve that, right?
Oh, correct. Yeah. I mean, it's not all banks allow that. There's maybe three banks at the top of mind that I think will do that. However, it also, like, that's the simple approach. But depending on the type of employment that you have and your income. So, for example, this particular inquiry, the person said they have around 4 million yen annual income. One of the banks that does that has a requirement of at least 5 million yen annual income, right? So you need to be over 5 million yen annual. Other banks will accept it as well, but they'll also have Japanese requirements. So in general, with Japanese banks, you need to be able to understand some Japanese and converse in Japanese. It doesn't have to be a very high level, and you don't need to be able to read the full contract in Japanese, but they want you to understand their explanation. Often when we deal with our banks, I will attend with the bank with you. And although I'm not meant to just translate or interpret, often, even if you have sort of, you know, some quite basic Japanese, that should be sufficient. If you try to go into a bank yourself and apply directly, you can still do that, but you're going to have to wing a lot of the Japanese ability, and maybe there's some stuff that's going over your head. And if the bank feels, this, we're not so confident with this person's understanding of the mortgage and the terms, then they'll say, look, you don't speak Japanese well enough to get the loan. But often if you're, you know, with us, I'll often explain a lot of the financing stuff in advance, and you'll have a good idea of how the system works. So when you go in and we're doing the discussion with the bank, you'll kind of already understand the concepts that they're presenting, right? It's not a first-time knowledge.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which, if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator, And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
So that's what we do, and that's based on my experience. So going back to the point about the person's income, the banks will, you know, it's both clear cut, but they will also try to see. It will depend a bit on you as an individual, your employment, the type of company you work for. So if you have earned 4 million yen a year and you work for a small startup that has three people, that's different than earning 4 million yen a year working at Sony.
Right.
Or Dentsu, you know, those big Japanese companies. So there's some differences that we need to take into consideration. But look, in general, if someone says, look, they earn 4 million yen annual income and they work at just a regular company and they can speak some conversational Japanese, I'll say, yeah, sure, you can probably get 80% financing.
Might take some shopping around though, like you said, not all banks.
Yeah. And look, your Japan, like your agent will be able to do that. Like I'll do that for my clients. Mm-hmm. Generally, when I have the consultation with a client, we'll do like a 1 hour Zoom call. I tell them just to, you know, send me an email, sales@realestate.jp, or sometimes my calendar is open on the website. And they just book a consultation. It's like a 45 minute to 1 hour Zoom call. And we discuss their employment and financing situation and also the kind of property. And we have a good idea of, okay, based on your situation, I know which bank will give you the best loan terms. And the best loan terms in general, in my book, is no money down and very low interest rate. Right now we're getting 0.29, 0.19 even is one of the options that we're going for now for a new client, which is absolutely ridiculous. And that's, you know, that's no money down at all. Like the bank pays for all of it. But that said, I focus mostly in Tokyo. Most of my clients, the properties we deal with are about 70 or 80 million yen and above. So that's in general clients with a household income of about 8 million yen and above, 7 or 8 million yen and above, are the ones that can afford the ones, afford kind of properties in Tokyo. If you're, you know, people that are on, you know, like sort of 4 or 5 million yen and they're looking for places out in, you know, maybe Saitama or different prefectures or outside Japan, then I don't really support that. I like to be within kind of an hour, like a bit less than an hour drive of central Tokyo. If it's beyond that, it's hard for me to do good service. Mm. You know, I kind of go.
Two questions, Emil. So first of all, like you don't go out to those areas, but you know, if people are listening, there are other agents, like if they're in that 4 to 5 million yen and they're looking for something that's like 40 to 50 million, there, you know, then other agents, you know, might be a good fit for them. So I just wanted to put a pin on that. It's like, just, it's like, it's possible. It's just that that's not your scope.
So usually people that are like, so in that price range, like 40 million, 30, 40 million, you're looking at some older, smaller apartments a bit further out in Tokyo.
Or houses. Right?
Houses
as well, not just apartments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But like to find a 30 or 40 million yen house in Tokyo, it will be further out in Tokyo, probably out of my range of what I can actually commute.
Yeah. Well. Sure.
And that's what I mean. So these kind of price ranges, just to get this kind of place, it is a bit further out. So that's why it's hard for me to really go and service. So if we're looking for properties for you, you know, I've got clients this weekend and we got to look at five different properties on Sunday. So for me to go in every Saturday or every Sunday to go and look for four or five different properties and drive around, I can't do a good job of that if I have to drive an hour and a half away. So that's what I mean in terms of my service. But definitely, you're right, Tracy. If you're looking for a property like, let's say out just, you know, in Saitama, a 30, 40 million yen property, a house, you can definitely buy a property for that price. And a local agent will be able to really do a good job of that. Because if you're looking in a certain area, often people don't buy just based on budget. They'll have a certain budget, but also an area that they want to do. Mm-hmm. Right. And so in that area that they're looking at, they'll visit regularly in sort of that location. And so an agent who's local there who can just actually go out physically and start showing you the properties having to do a 90-minute commute is just going to be a lot more accessible. You're going to be able to view a lot more. And they're also a lot more knowledgeable of the area.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the problem begins though with the level of English service that you need, because if you are not fluent in Japanese or you don't have a Japanese chaperone with you to provide interpretation or someone like us, then it becomes a lot more challenging. We've got really a handful of agents that we can work with out of Tokyo, and many of them are either based in Tokyo or Osaka, but yes, they will provide services in other parts of the country and they will do it in English, but they are not locals. So they will be liaising with the seller side agents and they will have to get to know the area.
So I have another two questions to follow up with this, Emil, because this is something that really, really people are asking about.
Oh yeah.
Definitely. So do the banks consider, I mean, yes, the majority of the income is based in Japan. What about alternative sources of income that are perhaps abroad or other places? I'm actually asking, I know the answer, but I'm just asking because that's what people will think. To supplement what they're earning, will a bank, Japanese bank, consider an international earnings or just what you put on your tax form that goes into the Japanese bank, the Japanese tax office?
What goes to the Japanese tax office should, for the most part, also include your overseas earnings.
Right.
If you're documenting it correctly and are declaring your taxes, your income correctly, and you've been in Japan at over five of the past 10 years, which means your tax on your global sourced income as well. So if you are in that category and you are declaring it on your tax return, even then, the answer is no. The banks will not consider foreign sourced income.
Right.
Just what's local. Remember, interest rates are, you know, under 0.5%. The bank makes no money.
They don't need the risk and the headache. Absolutely.
Precisely. Even if you're self-employed, even a Japanese citizen who is the owns their own company and they're the representative director, the Daihyo Torishimariyaku in Japanese, if they're the representative director, even if they have a company with 10 or 20 staff and they're doing a few million dollars of revenue, the bank will say, well, we won't give you 100% financing. You will have to put down 20%. Or I even have some like Japanese citizens, Japanese nationals who work remotely. They're in Japan, but they work for, let's say, an IT company in the US and they're paid in US dollar. They remit all that money to Japan. They're declaring it on their Japanese tax return. The banks still would be like, no, it's not a Japanese company. It's not Japanese sourced income. We will not consider it. And now if they're not going to do that for a Japanese citizen working at a large company, but just because he's paid overseas, you are a foreign national. And it's maybe not stable income and maybe only declaring part of it. Like it's not really going to be considered for traditional home loans.
They don't consider assets, do they?
Not in terms of your more borrowing capacity. So I have some clients now that are, you know, they're close to 60 years old and they're looking to buy. And the bank says, look, you're within 10 or 15 years of retirement age at your company. So we can still give you a loan and still base it on your income, but you've only got, you know, 10 or 15 years of work life left. So we want to see what assets you have that when you retire, are you able to pay off the remainder of the loan? And it's still just a technical kind of, you know, analysis. And that's when they'll look at, well, do you have any overseas assets, be it real estate or stock portfolio? And they'll take that into consideration. But that's usually people when they're 50 years old and up that they will want to see that when you retire, can you still make the, can you pay off whatever the remaining balance is? What you do in that time, it's irrelevant, but they just want to kind of cover themselves and say, we've done this due diligence check on the client.
Now, if you've been following this podcast for a while, and in particular our JREP sessions, you're probably more than familiar with Blanca Kobayashi of Arc Reform. They're a bilingual renovation company serving clients in the Kanagawa and Kanto area. So Tokyo, Chiba, Saitama, Kawasaki, Yokohama. They can handle simple, small-scale projects as well as full house renovations, and they will work with you on the perfect design for your dream family home. But not only homes, Arc Reform also handle commercial property renovations, offices, restaurants, bars, shops, you name it, from traditional classics to the latest trends in interior design and renovations. So you want to email them for a free consultation and quote at info@arcreform.com. That's A-R-K reform, all one word, .com, and give your home or commercial space the love and care that it deserves.
Look, there could be some banks, some of these smaller lenders that will do the 2 or 3 or 4% interest rates that are more flexible and will look at your larger asset portfolio. But most of my clients tend to be salaried employees that want to go through this, you know, these traditional Japanese financing that is super low interest rates. We don't like, and often they're found, like they're married and they a young family. Maybe they just got married, or they are just having their baby, or they've got, you know, maybe two little kids. And that's why they've decided to really buy their own place. They are generally quite, still, you know, under 50, under 55 years of age, and have good, you know, just typical employment. And that's the majority of the clients. So we don't need to get in the process of seeing what these other assets, what other assets or savings that they have. It's not really required.
And it's important to note that we're just talking about home loans here. Investment loans are evaluated and granted on totally different criteria.
Yes, and the terms are very, very different. Yeah. But in general, if you want to get the 105% financing, no money down, if you have permanent residency, that's great. Otherwise, if you don't have permanent residency, but you have a Japanese spouse, then you're also eligible. Both of those have the expectation that you have, you're a salaried employee, you're a seishain, a permanent employee at a company, and not the representative director, not a part-time worker. And it's based on your combined household income of you and your spouse, but both of you need to meet that employment requirement. So what happens often is, you know, let's say one spouse is working full-time, they earn 7 million yen a year, and another spouse is working part-time earning 1.2 million yen a year, they won't consider that part-time employment. Often the minimum is about 3 million yen is the floor requirement of income for each person that gets assessed.
But they will consider the extra income for repayment, for monthly repayment capacity, right?
No.
No, okay.
So
sorry, Tracy, you had a second question too, right?
No, I think you answered it. I was sort of, you know, I know when I got my home loan, I mean, admittedly, I'm a daihyo and like I run a business and so I'm self-employed. So I'm like, I'm not seishain. But I know I had to provide a whole bunch of, because I had my my Nenkin, well, what I call my Nenkin, my retirement is actually offshore. And I had to provide evidence of that, that I did have, income, like savings that were coming in at certain times. So,
yes. So Tracy, I know your financial provider. I know that bank. That is not the traditional home loan route. And that is one of the banks that I mentioned earlier that says there are some lenders that will charge, not the tip, like the higher, 2-4% interest rates that will assess these, like your situation on a much broader level, what other assets you have, how much cash you have, savings, your business model and all that sort of stuff. But those interest rates are significantly higher and not what we usually do. And for most of my clients, when you're looking at that kind of interest rate, buying your own home is not as attractive. I think getting the Japanese home loan is really great value and hands down one of the best things you can do if you're getting this under 1% interest rate, right? Mm-hmm. That's really free money. When you start looking at the 3-4% interest rates, it's like, okay, that's a bit more complex. Especially most of my clients, how they are is maybe they're just 1 or 2 years away from getting permanent residency. Right. Or maybe they've just changed job and they are just 1 or 2 years away from being in that stable position so that they can get this full financing. So yeah. Often what I'd say to them is, look, you're only 1 or 2 years away from being eligible for this great financing term. You can, if you want to just say, look, I can't wait, I have to get a property now, and you're going to be paying 3.5% interest. That's I find that very difficult to think that that's the best option when you're just 1 or 2 years away. However, there are people that are in other situations where, look, they're not 1 or 2 years away. They're always going to be in this situation that is not really attractive for the bank.
Or they're thinking about going back to their country of residence in a few years' time, at which case they want to secure that loan before they lose their Japanese residency, right?
But in that case, they still do the typical Japanese rates, the discounted rates, right? But there are people that, if you want to have a mixed use kind of, like, I know, Tracy, you have like the first floor of your place is registered as a hotel, mm-hmm. right? There could be some certain setups for properties that a typical home loan will not support. So yeah, in that case, it's like, you're not 1 or 2 years away from getting this great home loan. You're never really going to be eligible for this great home loan term. So in that case, yeah, fine. You can go down that route of the non-traditional lenders, but that's quite a...
Yeah. Yeah. That said, I've not had any problems for... I've had my mortgage now for 5 years. I'm actually in the process of trying to get refinancing and actually bringing that like interest rate down, because I guess I've proven that I'm a good, I'm here to stay. But also I think the bank, they've made their money. They've actually done well out of me for the last 5 years. So it's like, well, support me or I'm going to jump ship. So
it's funny, we talk about 2-4% being expensive, but we've got customers in the US who will take that in a heartbeat. They're paying 7-9%.
Yeah, but like what my plan is that I want to refinance and get, a little bit off the, a little bit down from the monthly, the monthly interest, and actually can like put more of that into principles to try and pay it off earlier. But mm-hmm. every time I try to do that, the people around me, my brother and other, other people, they're going, oh, it's just so much hassle. Why do you bother? And it's like, because that's real money. and it's just too hard for some people. And they're worried, oh, you've got to go and put in your financials again. And you've got to go and, even the accountant is saying like, oh, that means I've got to do a bunch of work. It's like, yeah.
That's like, what you get paid for too.
So So you know what's strange? Yes, the home loan process. So when you want to refinance, it's basically you just go to another bank and discuss with them, look, I want to pay off my first loan. Like I've got 100 million yen existing loan with an existing bank.
Yep.
I want to refinance with you. And refinancing is very easy to do. The bank for the refinancing will assess you in the exact same way. What are you employed? Like, what's your residency status and what's your employment situation? And if you meet the income requirements, et cetera, to service the loan that they're going to give you, they will do that. So let's say you bought a property for 120 million yen and then you've paid off 20 million. There's 100 million yen remaining balance. You want to refinance. Let's say your interest rate was 1.2% for some reason. And at the first bank, right, which is quite high, the new bank is 0.5%. Right, the refinancing rate. So you go to the new bank, say, look, I want to refinance and I want to get this 0.5% because I'm paying 1.2 now. They'll say, okay, what's your employment, etc. You do the process. They'll calculate your reborrowing capacity in a very similar way to if you were buying a brand new property. Based on your income, how much can you borrow? And then they'll let you refinance. And the process for refinancing, how it works is you apply for the loan, you fill out all the same paperwork, you give them your tax returns and your income statements, all this documentation that you'll generally have anyway, the same process. And that is a pain. That is the mendokusai part. I do that every week. Right? That's the job that I'm doing. So I'm, you know, doing this, you know, pain in the ass loan application is, you know, a big part of my job that I do for clients.
It's like everything. So, we see that at the summit a lot. In February, somebody was asking when we were talking about the investment and stuff to look at. And it's, that is a lot to wrap your head around. But once you've been doing it for a decade, it's kind of default, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, I mean, okay, it's a lot, but you're borrowing $1 million from someone, right? They want to know where you live, which company you work for, and what your tax returns were for the past two or three years. Mm-hmm. And what your existing loan is. That's it. That's all they really look at. And who's your household? So yes, it is a pain to fill it out, but it's name, address, employer, income, and then the relevant tax documents and residency documents for that. There's no it's a lot of administration, but it's not really.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, unfortunately for us, you know, it's been such a up and like our income has been so up and down with the, you know, with the pandemic and things. So yeah,
that's
been a challenge.
Yeah, and that's the complex part. It's, when I say complex, it's not really complex. It's, you know, when the bank will look at your finances, they will say, okay, because you're a business owner, we need the past 3 years of your business tax return and the past 3 years of your income. And they base it, like if you're, they'll base it on either the average or the lowest of those past three. And if your company has been in the red, so had a loss in the past 2 or 3 years, then they don't like that. It needs to be 2 or 3 years of in the black, right?
And paying those corporate taxes like
that. Of course you're paying taxes, right? That's a given. But basically you need to be, your company can't be in the red.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just a employee of a company, they don't even look at the company returns. So that's, like, it's really straightforward. But for the refinancing aspect, let's say, you know, again, back to that example, you borrowed 120 million yen, the remaining loan balance is 100 million. You go to the new bank, and let's say the numbers all stack up, and the bank says, yes, we'll give you the refinancing. They'll only refinance you for the 100 million yen. They'll only give the remaining balance of the property. They won't let you borrow extra equity out and get cash out, like what we're familiar with in the West. So
that's a brain twister for people when they ask about loans in Japan for the first time.
Yeah. So refinancing in Japan is for two reasons. One is there's a cheaper interest rate. And usually if it's like about 0.5 to 0.7% cheaper and you have around, you know, 25 years remaining of the loan, then that's worthwhile. You'll save a few million yen in the long run. So if basically it's a 0.5%, or, you know, 0.7% cheaper in interest rate, then it's worth switching. The other reason is, let's say you've been paying the loan off for 10 years, and you have a certain monthly repayments, right? So you've got 25 years remaining on your loan term. You can refinance, and you can refinance for another 30 or 35 year loan term. So the same amount, you know, that 100 million, you have 100 million yen remaining and say 25 years remaining of loan term. If you want to refinance, they'll say, okay, we'll pay only that 100 million yen, but we'll give you a 35 year loan term. So now you've reset the 35 year loan term. So your monthly repayments are less, right? So that's the other reason people would want to refinance. But that's kind of it with most Japanese banks, like the existing loan, like, you know, the original bank that you want to pay off. You just go to them and say, look, I plan on paying off this mortgage on January 15th. I'm going to refinance, and I'm not selling my property, I'm refinancing, so I'm going to pay off this mortgage. And they'll do the process, but most banks, most traditional Japanese home loans will not charge you any kind of penalty fee at all.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's A-K-I-Y-A-M-A-R-T, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
At all. It's just you're just paying off the whole loan.
That's something you need to make sure is put into the loan contract from the get-go, these early exits?
It's not. You can't decide what goes in the loan contract or not. This is something, depending on the bank, you will want to decide. But the mega banks and the home loans that we do, that's very straightforward. There's no penalty costs. But some of these non-traditional lenders, like Tracy, you know, the example that we discussed with you, they are giving you these loans, they're giving you these high interest rates, and they'll also have a penalty if you pay off within the first, second, third, or fourth, or fifth year, for example, which prevents you. They'll have these lock-in rates. But the traditional Japanese lenders, the ones that we work with, you know, Mizuho, MUFJ, SMBC, Rizona, Shinsei, Prestia, all those ones, there's no, like, you can refinance after, you know, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, and there's no penalty fee for refinancing. So that's what we, and refinancing is not something we do as an agent, or, you know, in terms of the mortgage stuff, because we make our money just on the sale of a property. So I do get lots of inquiries saying, hey, look, can you help us with refinancing? There's no mechanism for me to help with refinancing, but you can just go to a bank and say, look, I'm looking to refinance my existing loan. It's called karikae. So karikae means like re-loan or change loan. The same bank will not refinance you. And often with the same bank, you can go and try to negotiate a discount in interest rate. They won't do that. In Australia, I do that with my loans. I'll call them up. Like
of the world, I think they'd allow that, wouldn't they?
I can't speak to that with experience. But in Australia, my task list every January is call up the bank where my mortgage is. And I call them up and I say, hey, I've been looking at different lenders, and the interest rates, I can get slightly better deal. But what can you guys do? And they will come and say, look, all right, we'll give you a 0.1%, 0.2%, or will match whatever you're getting offered elsewhere. In Australia, it's quite common. In Japan, they don't really do that. So if you want to refinance...
It's okay to ask there, does it?
Well, okay, you can ask, but I'm going to tell you already that they don't really do that. You want to refinance. But to be honest, like most of their clients, we're on like 0.45, 0.55. And it's only worth refinancing if it's like 0.5% sort of difference. Yeah. We had one client just now, and he's in the process of PR, and he's expecting the permanent residency to actually arrive like last month. It's been 10 months already, right? And so it usually takes 6 to 12 months. So he's been 10 months already. And I said to him, look, I can get you financing right now without PR. Like while you're in PR in process, the interest rate is about 0.625%. But he knows once he gets PR, we can get him like, so in 1 or 2 months, we can get him 0.19%. So he's like, oh crap, like if I just wait one more month, I can get 0.19 rather than this 0.625 is outrageous.
That's an amazing interest rate. At zero. When you said less than 0.5, I thought you were talking 0.4.
0.15, that's insane.
Like I said, so 0.625 right now in his mind is stupidly expensive. He's like, I should just wait an extra month. I should just wait the extra like 2 months. His wife is like gonna pop with their second baby anytime soon. So he's like, so he's got this time conundrum. but yeah, that's where we're at right now with my typical Japanese home loans, where 0.6 is outrageously expensive. Which realistically, it's not a lot. It's still a great deal. But seeing these really low rates we can do now,
I said, the 2-3% that we pay here for investment loans are amazingly attractive for people in Australia or the US or lots of places.
Oh, for an investment, that's a great deal. But that's why for me, before you do it, I feel before you go for an investment route, make the most of these Japanese home loans. It's ridiculous. And look, in this rate, 0.19, 0.29, it includes life insurance. If you die at any stage, the loan is wiped off.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you think you borrow $100 million, like you have a $1 million life insurance policy, it's going to cost you more than 0.2% as the premium every year just to have that insurance policy.
Mm.
So this is kind of the same, but you get a free house to live in for that duration. It's just absurd. It blows my mind. It is as ridiculous as it sounds. It is too good to be true. And that's why my number one focus is helping people buy their primary residence. It's just too good a deal. The number one thing I think you can do financially is go sign a piece of paper. You have a $1 million loan at basically free money with life insurance. On 100 million yen, over 35 years, the bank's only making about 4 million yen of profit. So you borrow 100 million, after 35 years, you pay like 104 million. It's that ridiculous. All Sorry, right. I've been talking a lot in this call.
This is really interesting. This is the biggest question we have. Yeah, like it's the biggest question we have at the at the summit and like on the, you know, on the group. And it's really interesting because, I mean, I learned stuff as well. So, I mean, stuff that I don't know. You're just a walking calculator, Emil. It's amazing. So, I mean, I really, in my head, really thought that you had to have PR to be even considered for a loan, but it's the 105% loan that is the PR. If you don't have PR, you can apply 80%.
Even 100% loan, yeah, PR, but the 80% loan is
for residency. So if you have a visa and like a footprint and you're paying, you're a salaried worker, but the 5% closing costs. That would be, that's the agent's fee. I thought that was 6%, like 3 for the seller, 3 for the buyer, or what?
No. So
yeah, but we're talking from the buyer's perspective.
So when someone buys, the main costs are our agency fee. So typical, like, and it's regulated in Japan. The agent cannot charge more than 3% plus 60,000 yen plus tax. right? So this is say about 3.3%. That's the agency fee, which the buyer pays. The seller will pay the same fee to their agent, but that's unrelated.
Could be the same agent, but not necessarily.
Yeah, correct. But it's for the buyer. They pay, it's about 3% agency fee. It's for, you know, almost 1% to 2% for the scrivener and like the lawyer, the attorney, and also the transfer taxes. In Australia, it's called stamp duty. But yeah, the title registration and title transfer, and then insurance, etc. That comes to say about 5% or 6%, right? If you sometimes some banks will have a loan establishment fee of 2%. That's where the bank makes a lot of their money for the loan, actually. It's a 2% loan establishment fee. So depending on if the mortgage has a loan establishment fee or not, it's you're either looking at, you know, 5% to 6%. Without the loan establishment fee, or if you're going to put that 2% loan establishment fee on top, then it's maybe 8%.
It should be pointed out, though, that this is for the pricier properties that Emil deals in. When you talk about cheaper properties, the legal and registration fees can be higher, usually are higher. So they can get, for super cheap properties, they can even get as high as 6, 7% just for legal and registration.
Yeah, because the registration and taxes are kind of, I think are maybe scaled, but then there's a lawyer fee is kind of a minimum. But even then, we talk about the percentages for us, like there's the government taxes, but then the scrivener fee, their actual work is like, I think under like 300,000 yen of is what their actual lawyer fee is. So
so I guess that's maybe a Tokyo thing. We usually pay a lot less than that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But that's, I mean, it's scaled according to the price of the property, but that's kind of the portion that their fee is.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the scrivener themselves. The scrivener's component there is a bit cheaper out of Tokyo. And obviously, whether they're English speakers or not, same as accountants, the more internationally savvy they are, the more they cost.
Okay.
But I think on next session, I'll have to go in a minute, but in the next session, we should get into the second most popular question, which will be Tracy's monologue, which is, can I rent out my holiday home when I'm not in Japan?
That is
honestly, the mortgage and that question are the ones that we get hit with the most on all channels.
Yeah, can I rent out my holiday home? Can I do, like, can I sublet? And I can talk about the licensing process all day because it's really quite interesting. And it's, you know, it's not just a matter of like throwing it up on a website. You've got to actually make a decision and be intentional that this is what you want to do. So.
Mm. Yeah, and spoiler alert, Blanca's going to be with us again.
Sorry, guys, I've got to jump off.
Same here.
For anyone who's listening, you know, if you are living in Tokyo, looking to buy your own house, you know, salaried employee, either permanent resident or not, you know, maybe married to a Japanese, please feel free to reach out, sales@realestate.jp. We'll jump on a Zoom call, have a consultation and discuss what is most suitable for you. Thank you, everyone. Sorry, I took over and spoke most of the Zoom call.
All good.
All right.
Okay. Have a great one, guys.
See you all next week. Thank
you.
See
you later. Bye. Bye-bye.
So there you have it. Some very useful info from Emil there. Hope you found some value in it. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.